Chefs use food as a way to advance a conversation. They take food to those who have suffered a disaster or use food to raise money for causes. We talked to Chef Angela Wilson about helping young women in Nepal to become educated. It's on Tip of the Tongue. Welcome to Tip of the Tongue, a podcast on the Nitty Grits Network, where we explore the intersection of food and drink and museums. This is Liz Williams. We're here today with Chef Angela Wilson. Angela is a pastry instructor at Delgado Community College in New Orleans. She's with me today to talk about a wonderful project, Empower Nepali Girls. And she's also involved in a particular part of that project, which is called We Love Momos. Welcome, Angela.
Hi, Liz.
So tell me, what is a momo?
A momo is a traditional Nepali dumpling. So it's, it would look to us like a pot sticker, maybe.
And so tell me all about Empower Nepali Girls and how you got involved in this.
Okay, so as with many stories in New Orleans, it all started at a parade. I was just innocently marching in the crew of Chewbacca's parade. And one of my crew members approached me, and this is someone I knew as a neighbor in Algiers Point, but was walking in the crew with us and said, hey, you should go to Nepal with us this year. And I said, sure. And then I woke up the next morning and went, what did I agree to?
And this was during Mardi Gras, right?
This was during Mardi Gras. Okay. Yeah. True crew of Chewbacca's parade. And I think we had about 3 weeks to plan after that. And this was Dr. Patrice Moulton, who is a professor at NSU in Nacogdoches. Uh-huh. And I'm also a student at NSU, but I'm not one of her students. It was very random. I did not know her from that. She teaches in a completely different department than I'm in. But so the parade was over, and I've now realized I've agreed to go to Nepal to do what? I don't know. But then I sat down with her and learned about Empower Nepali Girls and the fact that she takes a team over every year to work with young women in their education and career guidance and things like that. And she liked to come up with a way for every team member to really use their particular special skills. And of course, I'm a chef instructor. And so we came up with this idea to do a live Zoom cook-along show. And so last year we did Dal Bhat, which was lentils and rice and a little vegetable curry. And then we also made tea on the program and did like all sorts of little other things. We sold tickets to it. We had people join in and cook along with us.
Oh, the cook along is so fun. Yes.
This is what it is now. It's our cook along. And so this year we're doing momos for the cook along.
Oh, that just sounds great fun. So you have people in Nepal doing this too, right?
Yes. So we will be in Nepal. And like last year, I went into this with a laptop and a camera and not knowing what we were getting into. We were in little kind of Western style apartments, but we had a very long, narrow kitchen. And of all of the little apartments that the team members were staying in, we had one that we were like, okay, this might kind of work. We had about 4 feet by maybe 8 feet to work with. Mm-hmm. So we had a lamp over us that the camera was hanging from, with someone outside a window with the laptop. It was very interesting. There was a lot of weird things going on. But we managed to get it so that people could see what we were doing. And then we had guests who joined in who then later sent us pictures of what they cooked. And it was a great way to bring everybody together. And so we decided we're going to try to make it an annual event. And Momo's got picked for this year. And now I'm we're going to be a little bit more technologically advanced. I have two cameras this time.
Oh
Two
my.
cameras and a mic. But it was an interesting experience not knowing what could the setup would be like. I had not met any of the girls at that point, but I went over, and it's our administrator for ENG, Babby, who kind of led the whole thing. And then her mom came in to help. We had two other girls who work with us, so it was kind of a little gang. And then we got the ENG volunteer team members to work with us as well. So they came on and said hi, and who they were, introduced themselves. And so we're going to kind of do the same format this year and see how we go, except we have something new this year where we have restaurants in the United States joining us that are selling
And
tickets.
what are they doing?
So there's one here in New Orleans. It's Tanti's Cocktail Bar and Bistro in Algiers Point. They're doing a four-course meal that will include the momos as one of the courses. And then their dessert course is ice cream based on chai flavor, which is common tea that they drink all the time in Nepal, that I made. So I'm making that for them. They're taking reservations, and the suggested donation is $60 for the reservation. And it's the same night. They're going to broadcast this right on there on their screen. Then we also have one in Natchitoches. So there's a catering company, I think, doing an event in Natchitoches. And then there's another group in San Antonio called the Gumbo Ranch. And they're doing an event, and they're all going to broadcast us simultaneously as we're doing this in Nepal, which in Nepal, 7 o'clock New Orleans time, it's 5:45 a.m.
Oh my.
So we're up at 4:30 in the morning to make dinner for everybody while it's going on here. So it's all an interesting thing that's happening, and it seems to have gotten bigger this year than it was last year, and hopefully next year it'll be bigger than it was this year and the year before.
So tell me more about the organization, Empower Nepali Girls.
So Empower Nepali Girls started, I believe, around 2001, and it had a different name at the time. And then in 2010, it turned to Empower Nepali Girls. And they've basically young ladies, young women in Nepal, the education for young women is not a priority. They would more likely be married off at a very young age or sold if the families can't take care of them. So what Empower Nepali Girls does is they go and identify young women in the villages who are likely to succeed, to show potential. And these young women, as they go through school and progress, actually can bring up the whole village, kind of. It encourages the whole village. And they're now aging into college, and ENG is trying to help them go to college. They are graduating from college. They are coming back to help other girls in the group. And so right now, it's a very small group. We have about 280 girls that we help, but then we also go on and help the schools that they're in. So last year, we had one school we went and provided school supplies to all the kids. This year, there's one school that we've collected money separately for to help buy the kids' uniforms. Literally for about $20, the students will get a winter and a summer uniform and
Wow.
other school supplies. And it's about, of that school, I think that school has 700 students, and we managed on a very short period of time to collect enough money for 300 uniforms. And that's going to be the students identified with the most need for that. And so that could be boy students or girl students or anyone. If the Empower Nepali Girls are specific to young ladies and young women. And it's great that they're moving from being youngsters, starting at 8 or 10 years old, and then going into college. And ENG is able to help them in college as well.
Oh, it sounds really remarkable. I can see how eventually that just changes the whole culture and, little by little.
I think that's the idea, that women's empowerment and women having a voice. I last year when I went over, I don't think I realized exactly what it was going to be like, because we do home visits as well, and that's one of the big things that ENG does is the volunteers come over and they meet with the schools and they do home visits with the students. And I got to do that last year, and it was amazing for me. It was kind of surprising and shocking, but it's a wonderful thing for these girls to be able to go to school where I took it for granted. I mean, I think I'm a school junkie. I keep going back, but to see the happiness it brings them and the encouragement for everyone and how the families are supportive of it, it touches your heart.
So tell us how, if someone wants to get involved by either attending the class or making a donation or anything like that, how can they do it?
So there are a couple of ways they can come to the dinner. So all you have to do is call Tanti's Cocktail Bar and Bistro, Bar and Bistro in Algiers Point, and make a reservation for March 28th for the
And
DePaul dinner.
is that something that there's a website that all of that information is located on?
It's on their Facebook page and it's on my Facebook page. It's running around Facebook. It's on Instagram. I think that we were trying to connect it to the Empower Nepali Girls web page, and it's not quite done yet because we had a glitch. But it's on there, Tati's Facebook page. And then the tickets are being sold for the cook along on Eventbrite. So if you Google We Love Momos Eventbrite, it's going to come up and you're going to see Empower Nepali Girls. And we also have t-shirts made for it, like you can buy on Bonfire. So it's kind of bringing everything together.
Okay. So is there is also though a Empower Nepali Girls website that people
Yes,
can
there
go
is.
to? And is
Yes.
that simply empowernepaligirls.org or what is it?
That's exactly what it is. It's empowernepaligirls.org. And it's currently being updated, but all the information is still there about how it started, what it does, why it's doing what it does. They did a lot of earthquake relief as well. How long ago was that earthquake? Maybe 5 years ago, there was a huge earthquake in Nepal, and they went in to help as well. So they do, and 100% of the money we make goes straight to the scholarships. There's no money that's allocated for anything administrative. That's all covered by someone else. So you know that the dollars that you spend are going to the girls.
So tell me, I think it's really so interesting that chefs tend to use food, of course, it's because it's what they know, to raise money for things that they believe in. So have you done this before? Have there been other reasons for you to maybe have a big bake sale since you are a pastry chef, or do other things that have supported organizations?
You're right. We do that. What we do, I always describe being a chef as somewhat of a vain thing. We like to make people happy and we like to know we're making people happy. And I think for me, this comes from growing up in a family that my dad was a politician. He was also in law enforcement. My mother worked with little kids, but owned her own company. My mom is Manpa Pals, or was Manpa Pals. And I think that's part of the culture I was brought up in. I will say this, I was a very active 4-H-er, like that. I love the 4-H. And so when I moved back to New Orleans, I contacted Orleans Parish 4-H and was like, what can I do? Let's do stuff. So I'll go and I'll make gingerbread houses with them, or I've taken my students to go judge 4-H competitions in the past. Basically, if somebody asked me to help, I'm like, sure, okay. To the point that people are like, Angela, stop saying yes. Can't do everything, but I think it's just in our nature to go out there and help people. We get our students to do community service hours. Sometimes they help us, sometimes it's stuff they come up with. But I think as a school, Delgado encourages that. So out in the community, this is what we do. We feed people, whether we're doing it for money or not. We've done relief feeding through Delgado. And so I think it's something we're trying. my generation of instructor is trying to pass that down to the students in school coming up, like say, hey, give back to the community because they're what employs us. If that may if all that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense. I mean, I remember you working on a big bake sale for the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. And so that I just remember that. So it's always there. Now, I'm also interested in what you're studying now, because you said you were a student, but you weren't a student of Dr. Moulton. So tell me what you're studying.
So I am getting
Why?
why. I honestly think I have some kind of weird addiction to education. I this is the way I look at it, that education is kind of like a tattoo. You get one and you remember how painful it is, and then you forget after a couple of years and go back, and then you're like, oh yeah, I remember how painful this was. So I started teaching about 15 years ago. And when I started teaching culinary, I thought, well, great, I can do this. I'm a chef. I can teach other people to do it. And I realized I don't know how to teach. Teaching adults is just a different ball game. And so I decided to go back to school and get a master's degree in education, which gave me a lot more insight into teaching adults and how I teach and designing curriculum and things like that. And then when I got to Delgado, there was an opportunity for me to go to NSU through Delgado. And so I decided, okay, well, I'm going to enter this doctoral program and I'm going to get a doctorate in education. And all of a sudden that became a thing. Like people going, chefs, there are no chefs with this level of education. I'm like, sure, there are. And then come to find out, if you're not a food scientist, I think I know two other chefs. Actually, one's not certified, one other certified chef who has a doctorate. And I'm like, I'm apparently joining a very small group of people. But I like education. I like teaching. I like learning things. Now that I'm a month from defending my dissertation, I'm
Oh,
not
wow,
sure.
you're that close, my.
I'm having the nightmares now. I think, I laugh about it, and I think if I went back 4 years, I wouldn't do this again, but it's a lie. I would do it.
Sure.
Every bit of pain, anguish, and crying I've done over the last 4 years, suffering over my APA manual and my citations, and I would go back and do it again. I just love it.
And so
I love getting into education.
what is your dissertation about?
It is about the barriers to the retention of Black female culinary students, because we've seen a very big change at Delgado from the 90s, when all of our students, the majority of our students, were white males, to the majority of our students are female and minorities. And I just narrowed it down to the Black females, because we have so many of them at Delgado right now in our program, wanting to do their own thing and wanting to own their own businesses and just getting out there and getting the education. And so I narrowed my focus down to that, but I really wanted to look at minority females. And in the aspect of being a female in a commercial kitchen atmosphere where it's very white male dominated.
And
So,
so do you think that's changing all around the country or just here in the New Orleans area? What do you think?
absolutely, I think it's changing all around the country. From the research that I've done for my dissertation, just looking at how the James Beard Awards are changing a little, the demographic of chefs running kitchens in the United States is changing. The focus is on more women and minorities. I think I think there's a big change coming to the industry in that respect. It's good. I think it's more reflective of us as a culture than, a white male dominated kitchen. And I mean, this comes, I quote Anthony Bourdain in there. He talked about that. A lot of people have talked about it. As a pastry chef, I was sort of in that, oh yeah, women are in pastry
Yeah, you were
category.
in the ghetto, yes.
Yeah, I was shoved over there. But that also didn't mean that they wouldn't come and say, chef, we need your help in the kitchen. And I'm like, okay, so apparently I'm all right to come help you when you need help. But otherwise, I'm a girl in pastry. So it's been an interesting thing to study from a female aspect, from a minority aspect, from a global look. You know, I looked at it globally because I worked in Australia for almost 10 years, and they are very reflective of us in this way.
I think it's really interesting when you think about cuisine as it's developed all over the world. And I'm not talking about cuisine that somebody cooks in a restaurant. I'm just talking about the cuisine of various places. Almost all of that was developed by women because it was done in the home, and it has been totally unrecognized. And yet, when you sort of refine it, so to speak, and then serve that same thing in a restaurant, all of a sudden, then it's like so wonderful. And actually, it was all developed by women.
I know when you look at these interviews with chefs, a lot of them will say, "Oh, I learned to cook at my mother's foot, my grandmother's foot." And yet, when it filters through, it's like, wait, where's our credit? Like, the women are the ones who are doing this. We're the ones who are teaching it. We're the ones who are doing it in the home. We're the ones who grew up with it, and they give the credit, but it doesn't filter through to women being in charge of the kitchen.
No, and that women have invented cuisine. I mean, it's really when you think about a cuisine like the way Sidney Mintz talked about it. So Sidney Mintz, the anthropologist, he said there are three aspects of cuisine. And so he gives you an actual definition that you can apply over and over again. So if you think about the food of New Orleans, just to be very narrow in our focus, the first aspect of cuisine is that everyone eats the same food. So that means whatever your class system is, or however you differentiate one group of people from another, it doesn't matter because they all eat the same thing. So we know, for example, one of the cheapest things you can cook is red beans and rice. And yet everybody in New Orleans eats red beans and rice. There's nobody who says, oh, that's beneath me or anything like that. So, number one, we pass the first rule. Everyone eats it. Number two, everyone recognizes it. So, if I go to your house and I eat gumbo at your house, even though I know it's different than my gumbo, I still know it's gumbo. And the same thing would happen if you came to my house. My gumbo is different from your gumbo, but you still recognize it as gumbo. We recognize the cuisine when we see it, despite all the variations of it that exist. And in a, as because it's a social invention, nobody's just said, oh, let's invent gumbo. You know, it simply develops. I taste something at your house and I notice that you do this or that, and I say, I'm going to try to do that. I really like this. And it just gets incorporated little by little all around. So, number two, everyone recognizes it. And number three, everyone identifies with it. So, this is part of your identity that you eat this food. And if you move or you have to go somewhere where this food doesn't exist, you miss it because it feels like a little part of you is gone. So, that means, for example, after Hurricane Katrina, when people had to go to Memphis or Minneapolis or Salem, Oregon, or wherever they went to live while they couldn't be in New Orleans because we were either underwater or there was just nothing left, there was nothing here yet. We had a website and people would write to me and say, I can't find coffee and chicory anywhere in, in San Francisco, and I can't find filet in the grocery store. How am I supposed to cook? Or I can't find camellia red beans. I can only find these things called navy beans. And, all this thing that people were worried about, they couldn't find red drink. I mean, things that you just can't believe. And I was getting all these emails from total strangers saying, you're my last resort. Where am I going to find this? Because they wanted to hold on to their identity while they were gone. And it was amazing to me. And so, if you think about that as the formation of cuisine, and then all you're doing in a restaurant is taking it somewhere else, making it have a fancier presentation or some other design of it, maybe with only chicken breasts instead of the whole chicken or whatever, you know. And you have to turn it into restaurant food so that you can duplicate it faster and, you know, over and over again in a way that you don't have to do in your home. I think people just forget that women did it. And they did. They did it.
How I identify with that is I've been homesick for a lot of my life because I've traveled all over the place. I've been, years away from New Orleans, and the one thing that always brings me home is food. I'm homesick. I'm making gumbo. I don't care where I am in the world. That's going to make me feel better. That's my feel better. My home food, and that, I think when we evacuated, that was what's gonna make us feel home, our homesick. We were not in New Orleans. New Orleans was in tatters, and we evacuated for Katrina. So what do we want? We want po' boys, and we want gumbo, and we want jambalaya, and we want the things that make us feel like home. And
Absolutely.
those came from my mama and my grandma, my
Yes.
granny and my mom. So you're absolutely right. So I don't know where the answers are, but I definitely hope they're leaning to more women running kitchens in the United States.
Okay, let's go back to We Love Momos. So tell us about that again. How can that somebody sign up on Eventbrite? Can they just put in We Love Momos and they'll find it?
Yep, they should be able to just Google We Love Momo's Eventbrite and with Empower Nepali Girls should come up first. If they have trouble finding it, they can always look for me on Facebook, Angela Wilson in New Orleans, and I have it posted on my Facebook account. We have it on the ENG Facebook account, numerous other places. They can call Tanti's Bar, Cocktail Bar and Bistro in Algiers Point and get a ticket for the dinner that night, and they'll be broadcasting us on the screen in the restaurant. They can also, if they just want to donate, they can go to empowernepaligirls.org and press donate, and we're happy to take a donation.
Okay. Well, I think it'll be really interesting to see how this organization grows and how after a lot longer women and girls in Nepal have more power and education. And I bet it's going to be a lot because of this organization.
I hope so. I really hope so. And I hope that this becomes a big annual event.
And maybe other people can do it too.
I'm hoping that we get groups all over the country and all over the world joining us to cook live from Nepal.
Well, thanks so much, Angela. This has been really an interesting conversation, and I think we've learned a lot about Nepal, even just for having this conversation. It's one of those things. You can talk about anything when you talk about food.
That's true.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Liz.
Thanks for listening to Tip of the Tongue, a part of the Nitty Grits Network of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. Subscribe to this and other food and drink related podcasts at southernfood.org or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you want to keep up with me, Liz Williams, you can subscribe to my Substack newsletter, also called Tip of the Tongue, for more information about this podcast, recipes, and just what is going on. I'm Liz Williams. Thanks for listening.